Google, Facebook, Twitter, everyone is selling our data to a third party. Always test every assumption with data. Any 300 word, you know, insight that you get from DataFide, trust me, sometimes you think, you know, more than 300 hours to get it ready.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Spotlight Podcast. This podcast is for curious minds and aspiring innovators. We dive deep to discuss inspiring, informative, and offbeat conversations on technology, business, and product and innovation to supercharge your career. I'm your host, Iwalola Shoboale. I am a passionate advocate for insightful discussions that inspire change and growth. Today on this podcast, we have a renowned person with us. I'm really glad to have him here. His name is Joshua Olufemi. He is a social entrepreneur in data, tech, and media. He's currently the CEO of DataFight, a research and data analytics company that notably worked on fact-checking and providing useful infographics during the NSAS protests. Now, I'm sure you're all thinking, you know, what's he going to say? And now we'll be discussing today how he founded Golaka Analytics. It's a software solution that helps businesses gain localized market insights for smarter decisions. You know, the story behind DataFight and how he supports nonprofit organizations in working in policy, public policy, and development. So welcome to the podcast, Joshua. It's a pleasure to have you in the spotlight today.
Thank you so much, Walora, for having me.
Awesome. I'm really glad that you said yes to my request. I just DM'd him on LinkedIn and I was actually surprisingly, you know, he responded almost, I think, within like an hour and said yes. I was so glad. Thank you so much, Joshua.
You're welcome.
Awesome. So we'll get into the icebreaker now. It's a virtual game. It's called What's the Big Idea? It's a card game, basically. So I will be sharing my screen. Let me do that now. And on the screen here, you'll be able to see some cards with emojis on them. So basically, what you have to do is select an emoji and then we'll flip the card and see the scenario that you'll be answering. So it's just to get an idea of how you think, you know, it's a fun game anyway. So which emoji would you be selecting here?
I'll be selecting the thinking guy, which I think sort of...
Where is he? Okay, yeah. Well, that actually depicts you, right? I get, yeah. All right. So could you please read the question and then, you know, take us through the scenario of how you would answer it?
Okay, you're invited to speak at the TEDx event. And what groundbreaking tech topic do you present to inspire the audience? I think I'll be talking about, you know, the power of, you know, data. As it will drive, as it has always driven, public policy and even, you know, development globally.
Okay, awesome. That sounds great. I guess we can get into the episode now, so that we don't waste too much time. So Joshua, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? And something that was surprising for me to hear or to find out really is that he was once a secondary school economics teacher. So how did you go from there to being the CEO of DataFight?
Okay, so a little bit about me. My name is Joshua Olufemi. I think the fun part is every time people call me Joshua, I wish they called me Olutosin, which is my Yoruba name. Right, which almost means the same thing, if you like. I guess that's the first thing. The other thing is that I always just think of how you can take, you know, the connection between data and journalism, you know, as one of the great instruments to create change or to engineering change. And that's because both sort of, you know, provides the same, they provide a balance to, you know, everything that you would imagine should drive change. Whether you're using journalism or media to inform policy, to influence policy, or to inform citizens, or even, you know, as an accountability tool to demand accountability, and then you're using data to reinforce all of that to either show what's the better way businesses should go about decision making, or even reinforce how government can, you know, prioritize what policy or interventions to work with, you know, how they should relate with their foreign partners, you know, how they should relate with their local actors, you know, and all of that, and how citizens also can just use data to decide their rights, their freedoms, and, you know, their lifestyle.
And that's never been more important now, I guess, in this day and age where everyone has access to so much information, and it's really difficult to even know what's accurate and what's not, right? So right. Yeah, I think this is a great problem to be solving. So you've not answered my question, actually. I want to know how you went from being a secondary school economics teacher, because I remember my economics teacher, he was very knowledgeable, actually. It was one of the tougher subjects for me in school, but it seemed like he just seemed to know everything. So I guess that's probably the foundation for what you're doing today. But how did you go from there? What was like your goal? What was your vision? And that led you from there to where you are today?
I guess the vision started from the course I read in university. My first degree was in, you know, what's economics education. But my department was given a name that was very fascinating, and I don't know how much people reflected on the name. Right, it was called Curriculum Studies and Instructional Technology, right? And from that moment, I was always, you know, going through the 4 or 5 years, of course, thanks to Obasanjo, it became 5 years, right? How technology was going to drive curriculum design, and how it was going to also drive instruction or learning as a whole. And that was something that I always had in mind that, you know, I was going to do with or without, you know, doing the everyday teaching, because I love to teach, really. I love being in the classroom and helping students understand, you know, new knowledge or experiment, or we co-create, you know, new understanding from what we are reading in the text. I think that was one starter. And the other was also my specialization, which is economics. And, you know, everything you learn in economics is how people make decisions, how, you know, data was always driving the work that they were doing. And I've always looked at how do you bring technology, data, and information, right? Because everything about learning, everything about education is just helping people build new knowledge, right? So that has always been something I went through for the period of my undergrad. And as soon as I came out of that and I started working in the development sector, that always was something I wanted to do. My first start of experiment, which many people may not know, was actually, you know, an edtech, you know, startup, which was called Azure Tutors, right? And what I wanted to do was an opportunity. This was in 20, if I remember very well, I think 2014 now. And I wanted a situation where people could, you know, it was sort of a mass online open learning platform where everyone could bring their courses and people can learn, you know, trying to do the kind of thing that at the time we didn't even have, Coursera was just coming out, and I wanted something like that for Nigeria. And but I had this fascinating mentor who called me somewhere in between and said, Joshua, we wanted to come help us think about media sustainability of our platform. And of course that was like, okay, let me learn, you know, how this is done. And from the beginning of that conversation, he said something that, you know, just connected with me, which is saying, how do we move from being a media organization using technology to being a technology company in the business of media? And that
That's profound.
Yeah, that was very profound for me. And I was like, okay, let's do this experiment. So I did that experiment for like 5 years. And in between it was this whole idea of everything we're going to do would be data driven. As we think about this, we'll think of how do we take data to drive all of the work. And that was what I did entirely for the 5 years. Every project was going to look at what data would be important to inform, to influence, and to, you know, incite, you know, all the actors. And there was 2019, yes, it was 2018. There was this, you know, National Endowment for Democracy Fellowship. And the question was, what project would you like to work on during this project? I was like, oh, this is it. this is it for me to really go do data for public policy and, you know, for development as a whole. And when the opportunity then came in 2019 to do this, I just couldn't think of anything else. And the whole idea is take the three key segments of our society, of our nation. You know, you have the government, you have the businesses or the private sector, if you like, and then you have the accountability or the civil society, which includes the citizens, the media, other CSOs, pressure groups, right? Mm-hmm. You will realize that everything gets easily convoluted because we don't bring data to the conversation.
So accurate.
Right? So government says things like, oh, we're going to give Nigerian students loans. And then you say, what's the number that you're putting together to mm-hmm. arrive at that, right? Or is it just a goose pimple?
Just an idea, you know, that just sprouted in your mind.
It's a good thing to want to do that. It's a mm-hmm. global, you know, practice, right? Well, however, what is your own context in terms of resources to drive that? Do you even understand this? Do you even have the identity of all the students to be able to drive that kind of conversation? You have a number of civil society trying to also inform citizens about things like elections, and you're asking yourself where and who are the people that you want to reach, and in what way do you want to reach them, right? How do we help citizens to better, how do we as OPS community of, you know, where minerals like oil, like, you know, gas and like all the solid minerals are being explored, how do we help them to understand, you know, even give them the kind of data that helps them to make the right demand beyond just, you know, vandalism, beyond just, you know, agitations.
Yes.
You know, they can say, we want this X amount of money and this is how we came about the numbers. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Those were like things that had always been on my mind. And then the other is, why is it that the Nigerian insurance, we just don't understand the profitability mm-hmm. or the value chain of the agri sector, or why is it difficult for us to just know how the real estate works, right? The sector works. You know, almost every component of business, every, it doesn't seem we're running on steroids.
Cloudy, yes. Like, there's no clarity.
There's no clarity. And the victim here is always the citizens, mm-hmm. right? I can't even think of mortgage, right? Because that old process is either the businesses are not informing enough, government is not, you know, using data to drive its own regulation, or mm-hmm. or incentivizing that process, or, you know, it's always just one story from the media about this scandal and the other scandal, and then the everyday young Nigerian who is just out of school thinking of, okay, in the next 10 years I want to be able to have a house of my own, doesn't know how to go about it, right? I was just saying to a friend of mine recently that in the last 30 days, right, I've had about 5 people that are very close to me, either, you know, lose their life, or someone very close to them also, you know, just dying. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what is behind this? Right, basic information, you know, and those are like, things I felt like, okay, we did a fight. We'll take it one step at a time. We take one issue at a time, but we wish that we can influence or be the powerhouse for the data to incite, to inform, and to give the intelligence that public policy and development will need at any point in time.
That is amazing. So I see some key elements in your story. First of all, a good background, I guess that was a great starting point for you, you know, what you studied. And I can see that there's a lot of curiosity and experimentation in your process. So you're willing to take risks, you're willing to try. Yes, it looks like the problems are big, but you're willing to start from somewhere, right? It looks like, you know, you don't actually have a specific direction yet on what to go, but you're willing to start from somewhere. So I can see that in your story. And it's really amazing. Nigeria's problems, Africa's problems, there is, like you said, not a lot of clarity around them. So it's really inspiring that DataFight wants to be like the solution to that. That is so interesting. Awesome. Can you please tell us one of the things or some of the things that you are like proudest of about DataFight, like some of the things you've achieved?
I think the first thing would be the type of value that we brought to the COVID-19, you know, information access, you know, shall I say, scene in 2020.
Okay.
It was interesting because we launched January 2020 and COVID came in February.
Just 2 months. Oh, yeah, the next month. Interesting. Right?
And the first thing was lockdown.
Mm.
And what you always have with, you know, pandemic is that there's a lot of emergency, you know, fund and procurement that has to be done by everyone, anyone, especially government. And because journalists would not have the opportunity, civil society would not have the opportunity to be able to follow the money, right? It was difficult for anyone to really do the quality kind of work that they could do. But because data was what we were working with, we could just work with data that was available online, public data, open data, and use that to demand as much as accountability as we could. We're also able to use that data to also support, you know, civil society organizations, you know, even governments to better think about how to either demand accountability or how to go about their work. I think it made us, it was the first litmus test of why we were here, right? We knew that, okay, so there will be time where data will be the only way to get the job done, either for the demand side or the supply side of governance. That was one time. The other time was also the one that you mentioned during the introduction, which was the NSAS. Right, it was a time that everyone just, you know, it was emotional. People were
very emotional.
People, there were a lot of issues that were happening all together, and we could just, you know, take the time to distill, you know, the situation just using data. We would, you know, we just felt like that was another time people were referencing our infographics. You know, we were asking, we're not just asking simple questions as, oh, who is driving
this?
We're talking about gender dimension to how judges were chosen, because if we're not putting female judges among the panel of inquiry, it meant that there was something that was missing, even in how you think about inclusion and, you know, diversity into what you were doing. You know, we're also, you know, providing a timeline of who and where these events and incidents, you know, were happening around the country. I think that was another fascinating time. Beyond that is how much we're also able to do during the elections, right? And so these are like three events that I think Datafied had come to be not just a powerhouse of for data, but it came to be the moderator of the conversation, distilling, you know, fact from the noise,
right? Exactly.
Or fiction, if you like. I remember during the election, there were a lot of polls going out there, you know,
so many
about a particular candidate or a particular party going to win the elections. And as much as, of course, the youthful mind, you know, and everything that everybody that was tired of, you know, the kind of governance that we've had up until that moment wanted a certain candidate. And the preponderance of that idea just made the poll also all look like that was going to be the way to go. But what we were able to do to say, okay, why don't you create a data model, right, that tells us from history and, you know, interest and influences that will drive voting to say who and in what volume or size anybody was going to win the election, right? And there was no way that people's opinion that could shift was going to affect this. It was just going to be historical data and trend. You know, and then we looked at, I think, about three or four variables. One was ethnicity, the other was religion. I think there were three of them: ethnicity, religion,
and gender.
The region geopolitical zones.
Okay.
You know, how that also affected how people would vote. And we kind of put the three together, and then also using one of the great work of an academic, you know, research work that had already been done.
Interesting.
And then we were able to tell who was going to win, the number, who was going to be the second place, and who was going to be the third place. And I remember people saying, Agbado is in your pocket. And I'm like, no, data doesn't like that. Right? Issue is the best, you know, is the best, you know, guide to what you have today or tomorrow. And we were not just near accurate, we were almost 99% accurate in terms of both how this was going to happen. And we weren't even, you know, saying anyone would win. We're only saying if all of this factor played out, this is who is nearly going to win. And if this other person then wins, it means that these other factors would have played out. And I think that was one moment that we knew that data was always the best moderator of any event or policy conversation, you know, that would have to have. I think those three moments really have been very, you know, one time I feel like, okay, no matter how
challenging or how much noise
I think we had our time while we are still here.
That sounds all very exciting, but I can't imagine how big of a problem would have looked at that time. What does your team look like? I imagine, you know, you talked about data modeling. I imagine there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we can't even see.
I think the best way to describe my team is something that I think it was me that said something about not doubting the power of a small number of people, you know, if they had their mind on the thing. It's always very surprising that the guys who get the job done internally, not talking about our external volunteers and partners,
okay,
per time, you probably would just have about 5 to 7 people per time. The entire modeling,
amazing.
Yeah, the entire modeling, the entire work was done by our insight lead, you know, who took his time to do all the modeling. And I remember when it was done and the results were coming out, I called, at the time, the person who is now our program director wasn't working with us, but it was someone that I know very well in the media, was a good person to bounce. And I said, this is what the result is saying. And he said, Joshua, do you have skeletons in your cupboard? Because people will call you out, right? Because this result is not what people want to hear. You are going against the tides. And I said, okay, maybe this is a good time to know what skeleton is in my cupboard. Like, let me
go and check my cupboard.
Yeah, let's put it out there and let me really know what is really my social integrity, you know, index, sort of. And that's the thing, you know, one person drove that. The entire election media literacy work that we also did for, I think, about 12 to 18 months.
But wow.
That was pretty much just three guys writing all the stories. Three guys doing all the research, right? And that was it, you get. And every other time we've done this work, you're always having the one to three guys who are core, and all the other guys just providing every support from, you know, our comms and, you know, digital, you know, strategy guys would always be there, very supportive, providing all the, you know, auxiliary support that we need. But per time, I'm not sure we have about 15 people all together in the team, but the core team that brings out all the, you know, great work, at any point in time, you always have between 3 to 5 people.
That is really profound. And I'm just imagining, how do you set the direction for your team? I imagine, of course, there's a lot of data, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of questions out there. How do you set the direction for your team?
If you ask them, they'll say, I'm always ranting. Because I think the power, the challenge that we have in front of us, the burden can just be a lot on me. And I'm like, hey guys, why are we unable to just provide information about why ban A, ban B, ban C, and people are just in this kind of crisis? I'm like, you guys, let's. And I think they always come to it with every understanding, because we're always looking at the real, the everyday problem, everyday challenges, right? But I think per time, of course, in terms of just looking at it systematically, what we always do is we have very good leadership team that will always, you know, pay attention, listen, provide direction for the team, the inside team, the programs team, the product team, you know, our comms, or what you like to call our digital comms team, will always just, they know where we're going. The vision is very clear, right? How the approaches that we will use to get there is very clear. There are three things we call, we say we are the data heir to development, with these data access for time. That's A. High is insight, high is resourcing. So at any point in time, you know that for every issue, for every policy, we're trying to provide access to data, or we're trying to, you know, extract that data from wherever it is and make it available. When that is already done internally and externally, we're trying to then create insight out of it, whether as stories, whether as research, or policy brief. And at every point in time, we're asking ourselves, what training should we be doing for others so that they understand this? Or what technology resource should we be building? Which is what led to the birth of GoLocal, right? We realized, okay, there is what you can get from available secondary data, right? But there's also the primary data on the ground that is real time. You know, it's authentic when you get it from reliable sources. And if you, you know, mix that or match that with the secondary data that already exists, you have a more robust, you know, a more reliable insights to use for decision making, right? And that was the whole idea around GoLocal, which is how much is the price of Gari across Nigeria today, right? And how has it shifted since band A, band B, band C? You know, how is the price of energy affecting of all the things, you know? And there's no better way to know, because, you know, you already know that you won't find that data easily anywhere. Right, it's just people on the ground that can tell you this, right? I remember the 2022, when the flooding happened, and, you know, devastating one. One of the goals we set for ourselves is really know every other type of data that will be out there. Oh, number of people who died, blah, blah, blah. But wanted to know the authentic or the real impact in the lives of students, mothers, you know, smallholder, or small and medium scale, you know, businesses. Wanted to know how it affected doctors and hospitals, you know, in the rural areas. And that was what we went for. So at every point in time, we allow events, you know, policies, right, to drive and policies and events to drive the work. And every point in time, we also allow our environment to teachers, we already know what we want to do. The systems are already laid out there. Access, insight, resourcing, right? Mm-hmm. And let this event that we think is important for Nigerians to understand, such as COVID, such as, you know, NSAS, such as, you know, elections. And now we're talking about electricity. We're talking about, you know, mineral resources. We're talking about the Nigeria debt profile, you know, and those who are funding, who are financing, you know, all the different sectors of the country, and we allow that to always just be what drives our work.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. So the certain key elements I've been able to observe from what you've said, you basically said your work is driven by social impact, authenticity, because you want to stand out from, you know, all the other data that we're seeing out there, reliability, of course, right? So my next question is around that. What are the major challenges that you see in collecting, you know, accurate and reliable data in Nigeria? And how do you actually and your team ensure that, you know, the data that you provide through DataFight and GoLocal is reliable?
I'm not sure we have a silver bullet for it. The first thing we do is to also ensure that we get the right, you know, type of agents, what we call agent or data collectors or contributors within our team. One of the ways that we do that is we realize we always work with people that we know they also have professionalism or ethics driving their work. For instance, journalists, you know, whether the ones still in training in universities or the ones that are already doing the job. depending on the type of data we want to collect per time, if it is really, really very reliability is like number one, right? When it is just understanding certain events or certain information, and we just need that from the public, one of the things that we do is we then use a lot of statistical, modeling to be able to find out or to be able to, remove what we think are outliers or extraneous, information from the data. So we move away from using human, reliability to then, technical or if you like, statistical reliability measures to be able to drive that, right? Do a lot of comparison, a lot of, around that. I think that's the other thing is also then look at existing, research work, the kind of pattern that they provided. If what the pattern we're getting is totally opposite of what has existed, it means that we really need to go back into, our data. And, and some other time we also just, up on the next bus and find ourselves on the ground and say, okay, let's do this together, because it's also a way we learn. It's also a way we connect with society. A lot of our guys, I mean, both internally and our partners are, journalists or media practitioners who their work is always about facts and verification. So all the instruments or tools for verification and, factual information are deployed to do that. At other times, we just rely on technology to drive that. There's what satellites would never be, we'd never be wrong. the GPS location on your phone will help to also achieve. If you told me you were somewhere else, because you're using your web browser, I would believe you may be somewhere else because you don't think that. But with your phone, there's a high level of, location accuracy, much as possible. At other times, it's just putting some other measures in between. Say, take a picture of the next thing around you. And because you've done that, we know that you're where you said you would be. But when it comes to qualitative data, which is more behavioral data, we always mostly just have to rely on what statistics are saying.
That is really superb, actually, I would say. When you mentioned that you actually make sure that your for your agents, those are people who have ethics around, their processes. And I would say, even in my experience, that's one of the toughest things. You know, if you're saying you are going to use agents on ground who maybe they just want to make money, the data you are going to get, even you'll be confused, right? So I think that's really superb, and I'm sure that anyone listening to this now is learning a lot. So I would like to dig deeper on the challenges. What would you say are like the major challenges that we encounter in doing this data work in Nigeria?
I think the first thing is what you just said, which is that human beings will always be human beings. You can't always control their mood or what the compass, their ethical compass or moral compass towards anything. Yes. I mean, I can tell you the number of times we've gone to the field and we've collected data and we say, we just have to we'll have to bear the loss because we can't give this either to the public or even to our client. And we say, hey, we're sorry, we have to go back and do this all over again. I mean, those are days that we just have to count the loss. That's one. I think the other challenge is also that even the data that you're getting from media report or even from government, have their own challenges. Sometimes it's not that they are inaccurate because they are intentionally trying to make it wrong, but it could just be that the sampling model, is just too small for us to be able to make a statement, or what the secondary data source was going after is not really what we wanted to derive information from.
Yeah,
I mean, I know the number of times we have to say to our insight team, let's just get this thing out, and this guy say, no, data is not saying what you guys are expecting, and we say, okay, put it out there. Let's put the blame on the data, not on us. All right. So let's go to that challenge of, and there's a bigger one of, ask me any insight that you want today. I don't have confidence that this is one place you will get the type of data you need to do that analysis or that.
So true.
So access to data, which is one thing that we made a point of duty, that that's one thing we will continue to hack. That's something we continue to experiment around until we become that powerhouse for reliable data. Data access is a problem. I mean, I'll give you the simplest example we've always been given. We've been given this example for almost 10 years now.
Okay.
Why the Nigerian budget never comes out in a machine readable form? Why does it always have the stamp and signature of the person that's... Why can't you... This document was first developed using a basic, you know, tabular data tool.
Yes.
Right? You can see that this thing was made out of something that was tabular.
Yeah, why some kind of spreadsheet
always gives us a scan copy, right? And we then have to take days, months sometimes just to make it available. And before we are done, the budget is already, you know, in operation. And that's where you hear things like budget padding, you know, and all of those, you know, new vocabulary that we've had since democracy. Return to democracy in 1999. And those are the, you know, just the fact that the data is not available in the readily for use or readily for insight. And even when they're available in that format, either the, you know, the scope or the, you know, the scope or the methodology that was used in collecting data doesn't make it answer the question that you want to answer, you know. And the fact that even government always... public data always, you know, is they always contradict or they always question the data. I remember there was a time, you know, folks in, I think it was governors that were saying they had a problem with the 4 million household data, what bank supported data work.
Okay.
And you were like, but you guys were part of the whole process initially. So they also have those, shall I say, interests, conflicting interests that, you know, makes it difficult for anyone to trust the data you're bringing out there. But one thing I know is for sure is inside it is some insight. Inside that data, no matter how limited or constraining it is, or, you know, it's the insight that we need to make available to citizens. And of course, I don't want to even talk about the cost of
course, you know,
providing any 300 word, you know, insight that you get from DataFight. Trust me, sometimes you take, you know, more than 300 hours to get it ready.
Wow. That's the amount of work, the amount of fact checking, the amount of, I would say, I don't know, rigor that goes into that. That's amazing. Well done. So just so that we don't waste too much more of your time, speaking on the challenges that, you know, we face in Nigeria, what would you say we can do to make Nigeria as a whole, or even Africa as a whole, actually, a more data-driven, I would say, economy, a more data-driven government, and, you know, where we actually, you know, like you said from the beginning of the conversation, with data, we're able to, social discourse can actually have facts behind it. It's not just grandstanding and, you know, one person trying to force their opinion on the other. So what would you say we need to do? Say we want to have the next generation to be data-driven people. What do you, would you say we need to do for that to happen today?
I would say start with literacy.
Okay.
Data literacy, right? What you don't know will always trouble you.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't know the importance, the relevance of data, you will always miss the point, no matter how smart you are, right? When every citizen knows the value of data to their decision making, or they can trace, you know, the costs or benefit that they derive from something to the information or data that they were, you know, privy to, it becomes easier. So as people grow up into, as you, you know, teach the next generation or the current generation about the importance of data to their everyday life, they begin to understand, right? It's not enough to, you know, slam some billions and billions of money in the face of people, but it's only always make them understand that even in their own decision-making, they contributed to whatever led to that. I think it's, for me, I would say, pay more attention to data literacy. Let's start from there. The other one is also, I mean, for those public and private sector folks who are really genuine about development,
Okay.
Whether for profit purpose or for influence or power,
Okay.
Reasons, who are really genuine about doing great work, they need to prioritize investment and funding for data collection. Right? And,
yes.
And you would always know. I mean, I can always tell if we were going to get a governor, a minister, you know, a DG or an executive secretary that will, you know, make impact just by how much attention they pay to data in driving their work from the day one. It's a litmus test, you can always tell. If they are just going to be populist talking and talking and taking pictures, you would know. Those ones that are going, you would see that they will pay attention to, let's know what counts and who counts.
Mm-hmm.
And how this count, you know, drives, you know, action or drives the next action we'll make. That's another thing I would like to say. I would also like to say that, I mean, for those of us that work within the civil society or activist space, to just always test every assumption with data. Right? And I will round it up by saying, collaboration. There are too many siloed data in the country that if we were able to bring them together, thankfully we have AI, we have a lot of data scientists coming up in the country, we'll be able to draw more information. People should know, I don't see much value in siloed data.
Yeah.
Right? There's more, much more you can get when you take your data, my data, and everybody's data, you know, attributing to everyone, of course. And you bring them together and you ask a new question. You will see new, you know, so I think collaboration, government, private sector. I mean, I'll give you another example that speaks to what I'm saying, right? If the banking sector weren't sharing, you know, basic transaction data or customer data, how easy would it be for you to just make transfers between them, you know?
Yes, it'll take days. So many blockers.
Right. So that's one way to look at it, right? That's one person sharing data. Another one is just the whole, information economics that drives the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
The old third-party data, you know, marketing or merchandising that happens with everybody that we all go to for social network, Google, Facebook, Twitter, everyone is selling their data to a third party just because they collaborate and they see, you know, the same value from the data that is they have. So we need to start to think like this, big tech companies or big data companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say, how do we bring our data together, either to demand accountability or either to drive the next change that we want as a country, right? And that's the way to go.
I think that's really profound. So the four key things that I can see that you've mentioned there are, one, data literacy, which of course I agree with you. And I think there's been conversation around a lot of the things that we need in our day-to-day lives. We weren't actually taught that in school. So yes, I would agree. And then the second is, you know, like you said, investing in, you know, data collection and data accuracy, because at the end of the day, that's what will be used to make decisions, right? That will drive the economy, drive the country forward. And then you also mentioned testing assumptions. And I mean, I think that speaks for itself. And finally, I think this is one thing I personally resonate with. Collaboration, because I work in the private sector, and like you said, everyone has their own data, everyone is holding their own data. But what we fail to realize is, when we put everything together, you can get to see the bigger picture, you can get to see the gaps, you can get to see the opportunities. So I definitely would agree with you on all those points. So just to round up, I would like to ask you where you see Data Fight and GoLocal in the next, let's say, 5 years. What's like your dream for Data Fight?
I think that would be that in key offices that drive, economy, in key agencies and departments and ministries of government that also determine the level of growth and development that we have as a country, and in every office or conversation, people are saying, have you checked Data Fight? you know, what is Data Fight saying about this? I mean, we get excited when we see organizations, you know, the number of startup pitch decks that we see out there, and we see our data there, and we're like, okay, that means we're making sense beyond even what people think. I mean, we're reading I think it was one of the fintech companies recently that actually used our data to drive.
I think Piggyvest. I saw that.
Harrywise or Piggyvest. Okay. And that's where we want to be in 5 years' time. That when you're thinking of your data needs or data reference or attribution, you can always just remember data fight forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. And I think you're very well on the way there, with your team. Well done to you and your team. Final words. Any advice for people trying to, build something around data, around, storytelling, around journalism in Nigeria? Was based on all your experience, I can see from what you told us with your EdTech platform in 2014, you were way ahead of your time. So right. You definitely have some experience, that will be valuable for us. What advice would you give to us?
As you were saying, there's this line of a song as a key that we always hear. You say, it's not an easy road, right?
Mm.
I think the first thing to know is that it's not a walk in the park. It's not going to be easy, but brace yourself. If the vision is clear and you have the right, co-travelers with you, I think it's very important to have the right co-travelers. I mean, the right team members, the right backers, whether accelerators, incubators, investors, partnership, the right, genuine one is something that you need to look out for from the beginning. Mm. You don't walk this road alone. Right, you don't work, it's not an easy road, so and you don't work alone, right? Yes. And I think the third thing is celebrate the little wins. It's one thing that will help your mental health.
That's true.
They do it, like there are moments I'm like, maybe I should just go and get a job, right? And that is this, but you've been there were moments where you've had. So don't quit on yourself. Don't quit on your team. And that's another thing. You don't want to quit on anyone, because the most things that will change the world, most things that will bring impact will never be easy. And that's why you just need to celebrate every good thing. That's the energy or the sugar that you need in between. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. I also find some value in that, actually. Just like you said, celebrating the little wins, because if not, you won't be able to even see the negative from the positive, right? So I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for your time. Is there any final thing you want to add to the conversation?
I guess it's just to say thank you to your team. I think, it's not easy to be able to find us within the whole space. So say thank you to your team. And maybe use the opportunity to also say thank you to everyone that has been part of the DataFi story. There are many people that are behind the scene, that are doing the amazing work. I think it's an opportunity to just say thank you to them and everyone that has backed us, that has supported us in between, investors, social impact, the philanthropists and all the rest of them. Just to say thank you to everyone. We are here to achieve these dreams together.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much again. And that wraps up another insightful episode of the Spotlight Podcast. A huge thank you to Joshua Olufemi for sharing his expertise and shedding light on the crucial role of data in driving public policy change and innovation in Nigeria. It's really clear that data holds the key to addressing some of Nigeria's most pressing economic and social challenges. So let's remember that with the right data, anything is possible. For more inspiring conversations on technology, business, and innovation, please remember to follow us on social media and give us a rating on whatever podcast app you're listening with. You can also check out the show notes for all our links and stay tuned for more inspiring conversations. Until next time, this is Iwalola Shobowale signing off. Bye.